Support for WPR comes from Visit Marshfield with Uncovering Hidden Tales from the Attic, April 21st and 22nd, revealing the history of a vintage fashion collection with ties to Marshfield dating back to 1850. Visit marshfield.com.
Do you think that we can put a stop to distracted driving? There are laws against texting and driving, but how often do you still see people texting or fumbling with their phones anyway while they're trying to drive? We saw someone doing this just the other day. Or how about people who are eating or shaving or putting on makeup or any other tasks that take their hands off the wheel and their eyes off the road? Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. April is Distracted Driving Awareness Month, and we are going to talk with a guest who wants to end distracted driving. His daughter was killed in a crash caused by a distracted driver. And then there was that horrible crash just last month in Texas where the driver of a pickup truck collided with a church minibus and killed 13 people. He admitted he was texting while driving. And the Wisconsin Department of Transportation says last year in Wisconsin alone, 113 people died in crashes that were caused by inattentive driving. More than 11,000 people were injured. So what do you think we ought to do about this problem? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Joel Feldman, an attorney in Philadelphia, co-founder of End Distracted Driving or NDD.org. With his wife, Diane. He was also the author of a recent Huffington blog post that was titled Rethinking Defensive Driving in Light of Distracted Driving. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. What? Tell us about what led you to found End Distracted Driving with your wife, Diane.
On July 17th, 2009, our 21-year-old daughter, Casey, was killed by a distracted driver. And I'll just say that I used to say she died, and today I say she was killed because a 58-year-old man made a choice that day. He made a choice that lots of us make. He made a choice to take his eyes off the road, reach for his GPS. Casey was walking through a crosswalk. It was a beautiful summer's day. He had stop signs, the driver, he rolled right through them, hit her, killed her, and said he never saw her. So until that day, I, like probably lots of your listeners, drove distracted. I would text, I would email, I would eat in the car, read things in the car, and yeah, it took me a little while, but one day it dawned on me that what this man who killed my daughter was doing was probably not as bad as all the things that I had done. So that changed the way I drive. Changed the way I drive for good.
Yeah, how horrible, and I'm so sorry for your loss. And yes, I think all of us, or at least I will admit that I have been you know looking at my phone if it dinged or whatever. I would not actively text while I was driving, but I admit that I have done things in a. Not keeping my focus entirely on the road. And you think you can help stop all of us from doing this?
Well, that's my mission. I do that pretty much every day. As you said, I am an attorney. I probably only practice about 25% of the time now. I just limit my cases to those where people have been hurt or killed by distracted driving. But the rest of my time, I speak at businesses across the country. I speak at schools, community events, and I'm slightly optimistic that once I talk to folks and, you know, we get a chance to sit down and think about the choices we make, that people can make better driving decisions. I mean, the one thing you have to remember is that we are human beings. So we are going to be distracted, even if we don't touch our phones. And, of course, there's a lot more than our phones that get us into trouble. But what I'm talking about is we can reduce those distractions, we can make better choices. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. So I think we can.
What sorts of behaviors qualify as distracted driving? Give us a sense of what else is included.
Well, generally people look at it and they'll say there's three types of distractions. It's easy to put it into context this way. Manual, are you holding on to the steering wheel or not? I used to eat yogurt in the car, so one hand would hold a cup of yogurt, the other the spoon. That would leave my knees for steering. Visual, are you looking at the road or are you looking at your phone? And the most difficult one is cognitive. Let's say you're holding on to the steering wheel and you're looking at the road, depending upon what you're doing, whether you're involved in a hands-free cell phone conversation, whether you're entering a voice command in the infotainment system of your car or on your phone, you can still be distracted cognitively. So it's depending upon, you know, what happens with the show, we can talk in more detail about the cognitive distractions.
Yeah. Well, does that even having a conversation with somebody in the front seat or listening to the radio qualify as a cognitive distraction?
That's the number one question I get. Mm-hmm. Almost every presentation, people say, well, gosh, you know, you suggest that we really limit or stop our even hands-free cell phone conversations. How is that different if I talk with a front seat passenger? Well, not surprising. Well, maybe it is surprising, but we study everything. We study everything. So it's been studied. What's the difference between talking on a hands-free cell phone versus a conversation with a passenger in the front seat? And what they've found is that the passenger is, I believe, over 12 or 14 years old, the passenger is to some extent in tune with the driving environment. The passenger, even a child, might yell, hey, look out, Mom, look out, Dad. And they've also found that passengers will stop talking if the driving gets complex, if there's a lot of traffic, if it's a construction zone. Of course, compare and contrast that with the cell phone person you're speaking with, who's distant and not in the driving environment, and they don't have those cues, so they continue to talk. And they've also found that people who are driving, even in a difficult, complex driving situation, feel this pressure, this social pressure to continue talking. So we're social human beings, and we continue to talk even in our own peril.
Yeah, and I ask about radio, too, because we have a number of people who are probably in their cars listening to the radio as we talk about distracted driving. Let me remind listeners that we are talking with Joel Feldman. He is co-founder of End Distracted Driving, and we are talking with him about how we can end distracted driving, as this is Distracted Driving Awareness Month. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Do you admit to driving distractedly? What do you or have you done? Have you witnessed this kind of behavior in others? Tell us about them. And what do you do about it? I wonder if we should report all of these instances or beep the horn at them or what. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. My husband and I were just driving down a busy thoroughfare in Madison, and we're in his vehicle, which is a little higher up, so it was real easy to see down into other vehicles. And I couldn't believe this. One guy was, I mean, he was just texting away, using his thumb, had one hand on the phone, one hand on the wheel, but he was looking at his phone and he was, you know, going, he seemed to be texting, not just, I don't know, not just talking at the phone. And I thought to myself, I wonder if I should report this, but it just turned out that we turned and I didn't get his license or anything else. What would you do, Joel?
Well, generally what I do is I try to let the person get in front of me because I don't want them behind me. There's a lot of distracted driving crashes that are rear-end crashes where if I would stop for traffic light, the texting driver would not see that, so you're run into. That's among the most frequent distracted driving crashes. So I let them get ahead of me. I occasionally will toot the horn. I won't lean on it, but I'll toot the horn hoping that they'll look up and pay attention to traffic. It's interesting what you say about reporting them. Last week or the week before, New Jersey announced that they've always had something where they've had what was called Pound 7-7, where you're supposed to report drunk or aggressive drivers, and they extended it, and they had a big press conference, and they said, we now want you to report distracted drivers, and we will do the best we can to get out there and get those folks off the road, recognizing New Jersey, Wisconsin, pretty much every state in the last 2 years has had a tremendous increase in distracted driving crashes and overall highway fatalities in general.
Yeah. We will check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we will welcome your questions for and your observations for Joel Feldman, who is an attorney in Philadelphia and the co-founder of the group End Distracted Driving. And we will talk with him about his recent blog post, Rethinking Defensive Driving in Light of Distracted Driving, after the news. How might we drive differently because someone else might be driving distractedly? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Distracted driving made headlines recently after a pickup truck driver acknowledged he had been texting while driving and collided with a church minibus, killing 13 people. We are talking with a guest during Distracted Driving Awareness Month about the dangers of distracted driving, and we're taking a look at some practical solutions. And we're welcoming your questions, and we're welcoming your own observations. Have you seen examples of distracted driving? Have you stopped driving distractedly? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. There was also a recent study that said one out of four accidents in the United States is caused by distracted driving. And the Wisconsin Department of Transportation had some statistics. 113 people were killed in crashes in which at least one of the drivers was driving inattentively, and more than 11,300 people were injured in accidents like this. Give us, a sense of the scope of this problem and how dangerous distracted driving is.
Well, the statistics that you cited are accurate. Generally in the country, and I looked it up, I believe it's also true for Wisconsin, from about 2008 to 2014, traffic fatalities as a whole were going down. So those of us who were in traffic safety, I guess, kind of patted ourselves on the back and thought that what we were doing was helping. But then, unfortunately, in 2015, there was a big reversal. It was the largest percentage increase in traffic fatalities in many parts of the country in over 20 years. 2016 shows that 2015's increase was not an aberration. And of all of the so-called human choice causes of fatalities, and that would include drunk driving, failing to wear seatbelts, drowsy driving, distracted driving went up on a percentage basis faster than any other cause. And I think in your the introduction when we came back to the show, you pointed out that a lot of us will see other people driving distracted. Well, I'm sure all of your listeners have seen other people driving distracted, but many of them probably continue to drive distracted themselves.
Yeah.
If we're parents, I'm sure we have teen drivers, we've probably told our teen drivers time and time again, don't drive distracted, but probably we've all driven distracted with our kids in the car. And employers, lots of employers, what they'll do is they'll say, gosh, we want our employees to be safe. The employees who commute to work, and then those who also commute, but then also drive for the employer. Yet those same employers often will say, I want an immediate response to a text or email, even if the person is driving, the employee is driving. So it's this, you know, we don't want other people to do it, but we still feel that it's okay at some level for us to do it.
Yeah. Here's Krista on Facebook. She writes, I see people texting all the time. I often run on the side of the road when there is no sidewalk. And I have almost been hit more than once by someone texting and driving. Studies show that your brain cannot multitask when driving and texting or doing anything else. These tasks are too complex on their own to be done at the same time. People need to be mature and put the phone down if they're driving. Is that right, Joel?
Well, yes, I agree with that quite a bit. But it's this, the toughest thing that I have to deal with when I talk to folks is the excuses that we raise. I mean, because realistically, the bulk of us have driven distracted, and many of us have driven distracted, and I put this in quotes, successfully, meaning we haven't been in a crash. So we have that collective experience of saying, okay, you know, I probably shouldn't do it, but it's just a couple of seconds. I've never been in a crash. So that's what we, that collective experience kind of makes us feel insulated from it. What the Facebook commentator said about multitasking, that's true. I mean, maybe some of us who are listening have been on the phone, hands-free, and we're driving, and then we arrive someplace, and we can't remember the trip. That's an indication that our mind was not focused on the drive, but more focused on the cell phone. What happens is, and this is worse for our children because they're the most inexperienced of drivers, it catches up with us. I mean, I've met about 100 moms and dads like me whose children have been killed through distracted driving. The bulk of those have been one-car crashes where the teen was driving distracted and ran off the road.
Yeah.
You know, many of them have also killed by other drivers. So, you know, when I talk with parents, I talk with them about hypocrisy, and the kids tell me that. You know, when I say to them, I talk in auditoriums and schools about distracted driving, I'll ask the kids, how many of your moms and dads drive distracted with you in the car? 70 to 80% of the hands go up, whether it's Boise, Idaho, you know, Florida, Philadelphia, Detroit, anywhere, all across the country. It's always the same. And the kids talk about their moms and dads as being hypocrites, telling the kids not to drive distracted, yet they drive distracted. And for all the moms and dads out there who've driven distracted with their kids in the car, you've taken a chance, obviously, driving distracted with them in the car, but you're teaching them. You're teaching your children that it's okay to drive distracted. And while we want to tell that message, we want to convey that critical safety message, don't drive distracted, you know, you're an inexperienced driver, how effective do we think messages, these critical safety messages, will be when tinged with hypocrisy?
Let's take some calls. We have a number of people who would like to share some stories or ask a question. We are talking with Joel Feldman. He's an attorney in Philadelphia, co-founder of End Distracted Driving. He is also the author of a recent Huffington Post blog post, Rethinking Defensive Driving in Light of Distracted Driving, and we will talk about that in a few minutes as well. It was in 2009 when Joel's 21-year-old daughter, Casey, was killed by a distracted driver. And since then, he has been working to change driving attitudes and habits and raise awareness about the dangers of distracted driving. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Mike in Baraboo is with us. Hello, Mike.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
My comment, I'm sorry to say this, but your guest has said he's optimistic about the potential future, and I don't share his optimism. I'm a truck driver, and I'm out here every day, and I see it getting worse. It's getting worse exponentially. Very, very few trips I go on do I not have a near miss because somebody in front of me isn't doing what they're supposed to be doing. When I'm driving in my truck, and a lot of people don't realize this, but my head is roughly 9 feet off the ground. If it wasn't for the fact that I can see over 100 cars ahead of me, I wouldn't have a chance. I have to react to what the guy's doing a half mile ahead of me, or, you know, it just wouldn't work out. I don't know how people who are riding 6 feet off the ground do it. to be honest with you.
Yeah. So what are you seeing, Mike, when you say you're seeing it getting much worse? What are you seeing?
I honestly think it's a combination of aggressive driving and distracted driving, both. My favorite example is somebody who's in such a hurry that they'll change three lanes over to try to get around one car or one truck and not realize that they can't, that there's something in their way. They'll run right up to the back end of a truck and then be trapped there. There's no forward thinking. There's no projecting. This is where I want to be. How can I get there safely? It's just pedal to the metal and go as fast as you can and hope for the best. Yeah. And it's really bad out here. And I hope that your listeners will try to stop and realize that, you know, it's there but for the grace of God. I almost bowed into a guy 3 or 4 days ago. He wanted to take the northbound exit on Highway 51 in Indiana. Well, he was on the southbound ramp.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mike. I mean, I'm not sure if all these guys are you know, distracted drivers, but I think the message that that Mike is saying is that if you're doing this and there's big semi trucks all around you, I don't know how to put this, but you're asking for trouble. Joel?
Well, it's a very, very good comment. Very, very good comment. At some of our presentations, we actually have a tractor trailer in the parking lot, and we bring the kids out and adults, and we position cars behind the tractor trailer and let the kids and adults get into the seat of the tractor and look in the mirrors and see basically what you can't see. And it was an eye-opener to me as well. So, you know, when you're driving around, you know, we talk about pedestrians have no chance when they're in crashes with cars. Pretty much it's the same thing with cars and trucks. But I think what the gist of what the caller said was we are selfish drivers. And if you think about it, we are. The aggressive driver who changes two or three times back and forth and back and forth and maybe doesn't get ahead, maybe gets boxed in behind a truck. That person whose text is so important that they're willing to take their eyes off of the road. I mean, I drive safely now, and I've, you know, your audience knows that I used to drive distracted, but today I care about myself. I care about the people that I love who are in the car with me, but I also care about everybody else out on the road. And there's such selfish driving, and I keep hearing this theme, and this is why I have some optimism. I keep hearing this theme from middle school kids and high school kids that distracted driving is self-driving. Maybe the adults will talk about distracted driving. They'll say it's risky and dangerous. The teens are saying it's selfish, it's disrespectful, it's inconsiderate. They're personalizing it. And I think to that extent, that's the way you change behaviors. We have to make distracted driving socially unacceptable. And there's some similarities that you can use with respect to what we did with drunk driving. I mean, I go to audiences, they say, how many of you have driven drunk in the last month or been a passenger in a car with someone driven drunk? Nobody raises their hand. Yeah. Ask that same question with respect to using a smartphone, almost everybody raises their hands. So today, distracted driving is not socially unacceptable. Drunk driving is socially unacceptable. So that's what we have to do. And I do have some optimism from talking with younger folks about that.
Yeah. Do we as drivers tend to be, besides selfish perhaps, overconfident about our driving abilities that, I'm so experienced that I can glance at my phone or I can eat yogurt without anything happening?
Well, I think that's a really good point. I've started asking audiences that right at the beginning. I'll say, how many of you think that you're below average in driving abilities?
No one.
Nobody raises their hand. Now, it's not scientific, but if you do this enough and enough, you get to the feeling that people think that they are better than they are. And as I said earlier, you know, there is a margin of error when we're driving. That's why we get away with these things all the time. So what sometimes I'll talk to folks about is, before Casey was killed, I would have told you I was a safe driver. I didn't get in crashes. I didn't get tickets. That's how I was measuring whether or not I was a safe driver. Today, I look back and say I was a lucky driver. I was lucky I didn't kill someone else's child, spouse, friend, parent. Are we safe drivers, or are we lucky drivers just waiting for it to catch up with us?
Let's take a call next from Pam in Kellogg. Hello, Pam.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have been driving for 50 years and seen quite a bit. I see way too many people texting. In fact, I'm always on my children and grandchildren that they shouldn't be doing that. I don't do it and never would, but there's way too many that do. But the thing that bothered me most, I just came back from Omaha, so that's 800-mile round trip. The thing that bothered me most was the semi drivers this time. They were on that middle center line, and, you know, they can wipe out more people than anyone. So I just wished I'd had a CB all the way down there and back, because there were so many semis on the center line. It was just really disgusting, and I don't know what you can do about it. It's, you know, it's a personal choice, and there's too many people making the wrong personal choice.
You think they're on the center line because they weren't paying attention, Pam?
Well, it makes you wonder. I hadn't seen that in years, and normally the semi-drivers are the best, but I saw it coming and going, and it was very disturbing.
That I-80 is something, especially when it's windy, isn't it, Pam?
It is, very.
I just did experience that myself. It's
yes.
Spooky. But, do you have a reaction, Joel?
Yeah, well, actually, what Pam said, I don't really have a reaction to being on the center line at all. I don't know if it's indicative of, you know, a bigger problem with semi-drivers. But as a grandmother, I wonder if she would ask her grandchildren, depending upon how old they are, hey, do your mom and dad drive and use the phone when you're in the car? I wonder what they would say.
They all admit to me that they do. In fact, I was talking to two of my daughters last night. They do it all the way home on nights after they get off of work. And I just, you know, it's like people that won't wear their seatbelts still. And now they have teenagers. And I say to them, how do you think your kids are going to be driving without their seatbelts when they've seen you do it for years?
Go ahead, Joel.
Yeah, there are studies that show that if a kid grows up in a household with a mom or dad who drives distracted, that kid's almost twice as likely to also drive distracted. One thing that I do when I'm talking with parents is I'll just say, well, if a group of adults, all the parents raise their hands. And then keep your hands up if you would do anything to keep your children safe. Predictably, not a hand is lowered. Actually, some parents will raise both their hands. And then I say, keep your hands up only if you don't drive distracted with your kids in the car. And then most of the hands come down. The moms and dads look at each other. They're a little embarrassed. They're a little ashamed. So we say we would do anything to keep our children safe, and I believe it. I mean, I'm a dad. But in the reality, we're not doing that. We've abdicated our responsibility in terms of teaching our children safe driving for the convenience of, let's just say, being connected on the cell phone. And then you think about it. I mean, in my life, I've made 3 911 calls, 3 emergency calls. Probably 2 were real emergencies. So how many of these texts, how many of these calls are really, really an emergency? And I do presentations with a dad who was driving distracted, and his 9-year-old son was in the front seat, and that 9-year-old son is dead. I mean, that happens to people. That happens to us. We can kill the people or be a contributing cause in killing the people that we care the most about in this world. So moms and dads have to wake up about this. We have to wake up, and we have to do this for our children.
We are talking with Joel Feldman. He is the co-founder of End Distracted Driving, and we are talking with him about how we can do that, how we can end distracted driving. This is April Distracted Driving Awareness Month, and we're welcoming your questions and your examples after this news. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about ending distracted driving. Do you or have you ever done things in the car that distract you from driving? Have you witnessed others doing this? How can we put an end to distracted driving, which, according to a recent report, is the cause of 1 in 4 car crashes in the United States? This is specifically the driver was using a phone within a minute before a crash or the moment the collision occurred. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We are talking with Joel Feldman. He's an attorney in Philadelphia, co-founder of End Distracted Driving. He's also the author of a recent Huffington Post blog post, Rethinking Defensive Driving in Light of Distracted Driving. We have Jack in Williams Bay with us now. Hi, Jack.
Good morning.
Morning.
I was just calling a... I bought a new phone maybe 3-4 months ago, and I got into my car, and as I was driving around, I didn't hear any of the notifications that you normally hear as you're driving, and that, which could make you maybe want to reach out for your phone and see who might have texted you or something just without thinking. And then I noticed nothing was coming, and so then, but then when I parked my car, all of a sudden I had a whole series of texts roll in, and then... So then I checked my phone, and there was an app on there that actually would prevent you from receiving texts while you were driving, and so.
And this was just on there when you bought it. You didn't do anything to make this happen, Jack.
No. I don't know if the tech at the phone store did that, or just was built into some other software. So it was actually something I had to turn off. And what it does is it sends a message back to, let's say, if you received a text, it would just return a message saying that the driver will get back to you, or my name, I think it knew my name, would say Jack will get back to you when he's done driving.
Well,
it was like an automatic response.
Yeah, you turned it off, though? You didn't? Don't you like it?
Oh, no, I didn't turn it off, but I was just... This one, I was playing around to see what had happened.
I thought
there was something wrong with the phone, and then I realized that this is a wonderful thing. And so I don't know. I think the cell phone company should probably be promoting this, because I was just looking it up online, and there's a lot of different apps, I guess, that can do things like this.
How about that, Joel?
Well, I think that's a great comment. Technology has gotten into a lot of these issues with distracted driving, and technology can get us out. So let me just ask you, Jack. So before you had this phone, I presume you would hear the pings, you would know you were being texted, and maybe when you got to a stoplight or something, you'd take a quick look at it. Is that sort of what your behavior was before the new phone?
Oh, yeah, I can't say I did it all the time, but if I was feeling like I was doing something real important, you know, or really had to hear from somebody, and I wouldn't plan on looking at the phone, but you could be drawn to do it, right? So I was guilty too. Yeah.
So absolutely. Let me ask you this, and maybe this will help some of the listeners. Now that you're not drawn to it, now that you're not looking at it when you're driving, has your life collapsed? Are you okay?
No.
Is everything okay?
No. And I don't even if like the app is off by accident or something. I broke the habit, so
yeah.
I have no inclination to look at it again. Once the habit was broken, you kind of realize what you were doing, you know? And so once you're made aware of it, no, my life's fine. I've been making it without looking at my phone in the car, yeah.
Thanks, Jack, for sharing that. Joel, is this this kind of technology something that you or your group is advocating more people employ?
Yes, I mean, we go on planes and, you know, I don't know if all of us listen to the flight attendants when they tell us to put our phones on airplane mode, but many of us put our phones on airplane mode. So we can do that in the car. I have AT&T. That's my cell phone provider. Their app is called Drive Mode. Every major cell phone provider has a free app. You can just look up, you know, your cell provider and then Google distracted driving app. We don't have a lot of time left, but the iPhone, Apple has had the technology patented since, I believe, 2008, where the phone will recognize if you are driving or a passenger. It does not. Driving, it will not allow text to come in, and it will only allow you hands-free use of the phone or driving with a GPS app. And that has not been installed by Apple, and it's probably an issue of Apple doesn't want to be the one who installs it when their competitors don't have it. So there is technology, and it exists out there, and it can keep us safer.
You know, we are. You're right. We are running short on time, but I want to kind of do a review of what we can do to try to help end distracted driving. But I also wanted to touch on your piece on how we should rethink defensive driving in light of distracted driving. What do you? What should we do?
So. Probably all of your listeners, because they're probably not teens, know what I mean when I say defensive driving. And defensive driving is basically you look out for the other guy, you expect the unexpected, and you prepare for it. So what we're talking to people about now is people will express, as your listeners have, gosh, look at what this guy did, look what this lady did. It's nuts out there on the road. Everybody's on their phone. So there is this element of concern, maybe even fear, about the other distracted drivers. So how can you be a defensive driver if you yourself are a distracted driver? And that's what we're talking to folks about, and we're teaching folks about that you need to scan. There's an acronym, SPIDER. S is for scan. P is predict where the dangers will be from. I is identify specific risks. D is make the decision to do something, and then execute E, the response R. And it's that sort of thing. When you're out there, you need to be even more vigilant today because of all the distracted drivers. Mm-hmm. That's what that article's about.
And let's talk about the role of different people and how we might be able to end distracted driving. Talk about the role of the passenger or bystanders in distracted driving.
If we saw a friend of ours staggering out of a bar with their car keys in their hand, we wouldn't let them get in the car. Friends don't let friends drive drunk. We need to do that for distracted driving. We need to do that. We need to have each and every one of us as a passenger have an expectation that we will be driven safely. And this is particularly so for the teens, because the studies show the teens are the most likely group, or actually unlikely group, to speak up if someone drives them distracted. So part of our programs are, and we go out across the country, we do talks at high schools for free, and we have speakers all across the country. Part of it is that we just talk to them about how to be a bystander, how to speak up. And we want to empower teens and even middle school students to speak up when they see moms, dads, other adults driving. You probably have some listeners whose kids are in carpools. Probably they have talked to the parents maybe about if they're going to let the kids sleep over, or what's going to happen there. But maybe, and it's most likely, that many of the parents who are listening haven't talked to other parents about how they're driving their children. So that we need to do. Going back to parental influences, if you've driven distracted with your kid in the car and your kid's a driver or about to be a driver, you better sit down with them. We have something called the Family Safe Driving Agreement. It's not just for the teen. It's for the entire family. Have a conversation with your kid. Tell them, you know, I've driven distracted, I was wrong to do so, and enlist their help in keeping you safe. Don't make the conversation about their driving. This is about mom and dad and the bad example that they've set. Speak with your kids, tell them you're wrong to drive distracted, and ask them to help you drive distracted. That will go a long way towards keeping your kids safe. We want to be the drivers we want our children to be, not just tell them, be the driver.
And do employers also have a role in preventing distracted driving?
Absolutely. I do a fair amount of talks across the country at businesses, and I've been amazed by how the employers want me to come in. I'm a lawyer. I figured they want me to talk about legal liability. Not a single one has wanted me to talk about liability. They care about their employees. And when you sit down with them, they'll kind of look around, the employers, the supervisors, and they'll say, yeah, I guess I have been wanting my drivers to get back, been texting them, that kind of thing. And they'll work it out. They can work it out right there. They can work it out right there. Acceptable response times. Maybe they have a separate ringtone. So if the phone does, the employee can pull over to the side of the road. They can also adopt safe driving agreements. We've got some sample employer-employee safe driving agreements that can be used. So, I mean, there's so many levels of this, but we all drive. That's what people say to me. Well, what kind of business do you specialize in? I don't specialize in any business. Every business has people, employees they care about, who drive to work. Many other businesses also have folks who drive for a living. But we all need to be out on the road, and we can't be selfish. We have to think about the people we care about in our car, but we also have to think about the people on the highway. We can't be selfish drivers.
Darlene in Viola is with us. Hi, Darlene. We're almost out of time, but this might be a good place to end it. Hi, Darlene.
Yes, hi. I have a very easy solution. Just don't have your phone on. I've driven over 900,000 miles in my life, and I don't need to talk to anybody on the phone. If they need me, they can just wait until I can get back to their voicemail, and I keep my eyes on the road. So, and my employer basically states that if we are in a car accident when we're on the phone, that we are liable for all damages. I think that's a real good approach.
All right. Turn off the phone, Joel.
Well, that would be great if everybody would turn off the phone. What some other people have suggested is they take a picture of someone that they love very much, their wife, their children, their parents, and they put it right there in the car with them. Some people say that it takes 21 days to break a habit. There's some studies about that. So some people say, all right, for the next 21 days, I'm going to commit. I'm looking at the calendar. I'm going to put the phone in the glove box, turn it off. And, you know, if you have a half-hour commute and you're nervous about the phone, not getting a phone call or something, pull over to the side of the road in a safe area every 15 minutes and look at your phone. You know, there's a peace of mind that I have now. I mean, I don't have a peace of mind given that my daughter is dead, but I have a peace of mind now when I drive. I know that I am not likely to kill someone else's child. And I don't let anyone invade my time in the car with a phone call or a text or an invitation to kill someone with my driving.
Thank you very much for being with us. Joel Feldman is co-founder of End Distracted Driving. Thanks to Brianne Shasso and to Chris Molina for producing this program. This is the Ideas Network.